The GAA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GAA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
So we've Super Saturday, lads. All football games are being played this Saturday. So they're giving the club finals until Sunday exclusively. And I think that's fantastic. Like, I mean, we've already talked about the club games being diluted into the intercounty season. So the idea that you'd split some of the intercounty games Saturday and Sunday and completely dilute them all together, like, they mean nothing. I saw some journalists giving out on Twitter about it. Oh, we can't cover all this. I say, you don't worry about that. You just cover the game that you're going to cover. Yeah. Yeah. And you don't worry about how many games are on. The club deserves the Sunday, Paddy's Day, which is always the case, on their own. Interestingly, on Saturday, two games that's on Saturday night on air, Dublin versus Tyrone, Kerry versus Mayo. I'm sick of Dublin already, and I'm sick of Mayo already. They're on the television too much, both teams.
It's going to be a long year.
I've seen enough of them.
Just give the people what they want. Will
I can't blame Ayr for choosing these two games because, like, I mean, it's a commercial station and they're the biggest games on paper. You'd just love to see a bit more variety. We've said it before anyways, down the divisions. Kerry Mayo will be excellent. Dublin Tyrone will be good as well for other reasons. They're clashing, so you're either going to watch one or the other or tape one. And that's it. But it's no surprise here, isn't it, though? Like, Mayo and Dublin are the cash cow. So the TV stations want them. The GEA wants them. And that's just the way it is.
Yeah, I imagine it's a ratings thing. It's like Man United and the FA Cup. Everyone gives out when Man United are on BBC every time the FA Cup comes around. But it's because they draw in the massive viewers. But I agree with you in terms of the variety, because even as a Mayo supporter, it's been so handy for me this year. Like, there was a couple of times I would normally go to Castlebar for like a few league games, like during the National League. And this year, the weather's been a bit crap.
Yeah,
and I'm only like half an hour away from Castlebar. But Ash, you're listening, it's on TV. Why not just stay at home? You know, that kind of way.
Last Saturday night, Laois were playing Limerick, the All-Ireland champions, in the hurling, Inamoore Park. It's like 5 minute drive for me. Now I had to mind the children, but I could easily have maybe made another arrangement. And I said, oh, it's on television, so I can So it definitely does affect people showing up.
Yeah, like there's some good games on as well on Saturday, but to be honest, if they were showing, say, Armagh Fermanagh or Cavan Monaghan ahead of either of these games, I'd be like, I'd rather be watching
maybe
Dublin
on Air Sport 2.
Yeah,
that's there for the Division 2, Division 3, Division 4 kind of games. Although Division 4 is completely sewn up, that's done. So, but there are good games in the other one. You just like to know what. We're only talking about Mayo, Kerry and Dublin so far on the podcast because we can only react to what game was on television. So you're kind of snookered a little bit. And then, of course, we get Donegal and Armagh and it turns out to be such a poxy night.
Well, we can read nothing into this.
We're not getting any luck here. So Sean Powter is on the show today, lads. Connor, you'll remember him. Connor and Conan obviously are here in studio with me. You'll remember him from that game down in the Gaelic grounds where he was outstanding and really drove Cork back into the game that day against Mayo. And he was outstanding against Kerry in the Munster final in the game before that. I think Cork might have had a game in between two. No, maybe not. It came straight from that against Mayo. And he's on the show. Like, I mean, he's had a nightmare year. So he obviously was picked for international rules that year, was nominated for Young Player of the Year that year, and then got a hamstring injury against Tipperary at the very first game in Páirc Uí Chaoimh. It was on the television. And he tore his hamstring out for 3 months, and the 3 months turned into a year.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk to him about that and how the hell that's happened, or, you know, what his story is, because Cork are definitely, every year you talk about Cork, they've won 521 titles in the last 9 years in Munster. Like, when you look at Fermanagh doing well and you look at other counties doing well with no underage success, like, Cork are a basket case, really, when you think about this is with Kerry in the same province. They've won 5 of 9. They've won more than Kerry.
Yeah.
And at their senior level, they're just going backwards. You'd almost think, Jesus, well, Cork, they haven't been winning at underage in a long time. So it's the opposite.
Yeah, I saw that too. And then I looked at the minor record, and they haven't actually, they haven't won a minor since 2010. And I think they've only been in two finals, two Munster finals since then. So while I thought, obviously, with the five under 21 titles in this decade that they're doing something right, but then there's a disconnect there somewhere between minor and under 21. But yeah. But that's the thing, like you'd wonder how much of a kind of decline this is, because like the thing about Cork is that there's 260 clubs I think in Cork, and like while hurling is always going to be the big dog, like it's unthinkable to me that Cork senior team wouldn't be competitive at senior level. So, but this, like every year you think it's a hiccup and it's a hiccup and it's a hiccup and they'll be back next year, and it's just, it doesn't seem to be showing any signs of resting itself at the moment. And like we often talk here about like tiered championship, and we'll leave that for another day, but if it was split at the moment between, like Cork would be kind of borderline, and that seems ridiculous to me. Yeah. That Cork being considered in a, like a, in a second tier championship, but yeah. Just like it doesn't seem to be getting any better. I mean, they're home to Donegal and they're away to Armagh, and they might have to win the two of them to potentially stay up. So yeah. it's not looking great for Cork football.
It's definitely not looking good for them. Like, I mean, it's bizarre how there can be a disconnect between minor under 21 and then between under 21 and senior. So there doesn't seem to be any logical pathway there, does there? Like, I mean, with players. So it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
But we look forward to going, Conor.
No, I was going to say, and that quote there from Rona McCarthy that you have down in the notes about, you know, sort of celebrating the Tipperary one. I was like, okay, it's a good win and it was an important one, but you're Cork, like, come on, win another game, like, you know, back it up. Yeah. win the division, like, you know, beating Tipperary isn't something they rest
on. I think they were at that let's get straight back out of Division 2, and now they're probably being a little bit more realistic, like, yeah. Shit, you know, this, but I don't know, can it just be a bad run of managers? I don't know. Cuthbert looked like a good manager at the start, and then it went all off the edge of a cliff. They definitely don't seem to have embraced the modern game like other counties have. Other news is, geez, I was reading this yesterday and I was going, oh, for God's sake. So I don't know where I was reading this. So the GAA are looking at restoring the under 20 championship, football championship, to its more familiar January to March slot.
Ugh.
Immediately I just stopped and went, what the hell are you thinking? Have we not got enough shit in that? Are we not trying to fix this mess between January and March? No! I can tell you now that this will not be a good idea. So a meeting of county board chairpersons in Croke Park over the weekend, one of the items discussed was the possibility of reverting to the old window. The under 21 championship became the under 20 championship last year and was played from May through to the All-Ireland final on the bank holiday weekend in August. Kildare obviously beat Mayo in that. So there was some clubs giving out that it was crossing over their club championships and things like that. Maybe from May, June and July, 3 months is probably too much for it across the summer. Maybe May and June would be enough, and no club championships should be going on in May and June because Intercounty is in full swing and pretty intense at that time. You know, maybe in July some counties would be knocked out and could want to play club, and this could become a problem. But Jesus, play it from May and June. Let it play off, because there's no crossover now. You can't play under 20 and senior. You have to make a choice. So it's going to get even messier if they bring it from January to March. Never mind the Sigerson, Fitzgibbon, never mind the club and all that mess it's going to create. It will also clash with the National League football. So, like, I mean, you'll have to make your choice. Do you know, like, I mean, if you pick under 20, you'll be missing out on the league. Do you know, like, yeah. I mean, it's going to be a mess.
Is that the point, though? Is it the point so that, like, some under 20 players can then play senior championship having already played?
If you're out of the under 20, then you're free to play it.
But is that the point in kind of restoring it to its original place in the calendar?
Maybe that's it. But, like, I think if you're in the under 20, you should be. I don't mind this that you have to choose.
Yeah,
between
that was a good
two.
Rule.
Like David Clifford, every now and again, you lose somebody like that, but like surely if the under 20s have to choose, surely the league is better as a developmental competition for these players as opposed to championship if they're going to have to make a choice between one or the other. And just the, like, you're on about clubs giving out about it, like clashing with club championship, but like the amount of trouble it would cause if it went back to January
and
March.
Oh my god,
with Sigerson and all that. I remember in Mayo there was a motion put last year, or it could have been this year, about delaying the under 21 championship till moving it back to earlier in the year, but that was only because what happened to Mayo is it put off completely until after the club championships, so you weren't having under 21 club championship till like November, and it was going into December, and it wasn't considered fair. Like, I know we lost the county final before and our under 21 lads had to play on a bank holiday Monday, and there was their first round of the championship in the under 21, so they were on, but they haven't moved it back, but that was the reason for that.
Yeah.
But like at an inter-county level, it just seems
under 21 usually is played later. Remember, under any under 21s I won were won very late in the year. I think one could have actually gone into the following year, I can't remember. It's usually after the season, like an afterthought, but it's this year. You can play senior after the under 20s are knocked out. last year you had to choose one or the other. We obviously had Keane Johnson from Offaly choosing or being forced to choose the under-20s.
I just don't get, like, I thought that was a good rule that you either play 20s or senior, because we're always complaining about burnout and these young lads having to do too much. And like, if you're good, if you're David Clifford, like, you don't need him playing for the under-20s, play him for the seniors. Like, and the whole reason that you're developing players in the first place is to get them at senior level.
Yeah, it is somebody. A rite of passage, though. It is supposed to be the next stepping stone to see you on into that, you know, see you on into that senior level. I think an under 19 is better. I think do away with under 17 and under 20 and just have one under 19. It would relieve all this fixture congestion, and no under 19 can ever play senior. So it runs parallel with the senior, and that's it fixed.
And what if you're good enough, would you let David Clifford skip under 19? And
I think no. I think that if you're under 19, you're 19. You'd play senior then when you're 19, wouldn't you?
Mm.
Are you 19, under 19, maybe 19?
Wouldn't, he'd only be playing this year.
In your last year. In your last year. We would have lost Clifford last year. In your last year.
I don't like it already, will
I? I am adding little amendments to it already. Darren Gavin. Lads, there was a piece in the Irish Times Zena Reardon had on this, and a little bit detail of him, because he's caught my eye and he's been on one or two Monday running orders, and I don't think we've got around to talk about him, have we? Like, I mean, a gangly looking fella that you might look at this fella at underage level and say, like, he's a bit too weak, he needs to fill out into himself, you know, and he's a bit of a late bloomer in that he didn't make the under 21 team in 2017 when they won the All-Ireland. He came on after, I think it was 13 minutes because of an injury, and then gave a man of the match display. That under 21 team that he came on in 2017 beat Galway in the final. Brian Howard was on it, Conor Callaghan was on it, Owen Merchant was on it, Evan Comerford was on it, Colin Baskell was on it. So it's not a bad crop of players coming off that.
He actually started the semi-final.
He started the semi
against Donegal, but he was brought into the panel late, and I think he was supposed to play corner forward that day, but Conor Callaghan got a black card after like 2 or 3 minutes and he ended up moving further out the field. So
right,
maybe doesn't look like a corner forward.
But that shows you probably the skill that he does have, like, right, they had him down as a corner forward.
Because that's interesting. So John Dively had him in UCD, and he says, I think he's a big prospect for Dublin. If he doesn't nestle in beside Brian Fenton this year, I've no doubt in the next 2 or 3 he'll be a big prospect for Jim Gavin. So Dively played with Darren Gavin's father, Fergal Gavin. Fergal Gavin was on the 1998 Galway All-Ireland winning panel. He was a midfielder as well. I think that's always gassed that the son follows the exact same position as the father. But Kevin Walsh and Sean O'Donnell were the midfield partnership in that, and they weren't being budged anywhere. Mm. But Darren's father moved to Dublin not long after that, and obviously his son grew up playing with Dublin. And like, I mean, I don't want to make a big thing out of this, but like, considering the amount of people moving to Dublin because all the work is in Dublin, look how many Culshie's sons are going to be playing for Dublin in the future. No, but it's true. And now this has always happened. Like, I mean, it's not a new phenomenon. Like, I mean, De Brogan's mother is from Kerry. Like, I mean, this has always happened. But I think we'll see an awful lot more of that. That, like, I mean, not only have they got a lot of advantages, but they're getting our breeding and all Culshie breeding in Dublin now. So they'll get the population, they'll get the funding, and Culshie breeding as well. How many more things can I complain about on this show? But yeah, I like Darren Gavin. I think he will end up. He kicked a bad wide against Roscommon, then he kicked a beautiful score. So I have to see a bit more about his accuracy. But he's definitely covers ground. He definitely is like a smart player, and he doesn't look out of place at Intercounty, even though he still looks a bit gangly. And you would like to see maybe Jim Gavin do the old Rory Kavanagh. Wake up in the morning and drink some or eat some protein, eat a big steak. Yeah. Didn't he put Kavanagh in this intense weight gaining
program? Told him to eat loads of chocolate bars, didn't he, Rory Kavanagh? I think he put on 2 stone, but he was just telling him to eat it basically every opportunity.
Oh, yeah, keep eating, but eat.
Including chocolate.
Protein just, and calories, I think that's. Isn't that what bodybuilders do when they bulk up first and then to get weight on?
I don't know.
Speaking from experience.
Okay. What we do is
maybe Darren doesn't need to listen to this show to know how to put on some weight. Drink a few pints, Darren.
him and Fenton are a scary prospect, aren't they?
For the future. But this is the brilliance of Jim Gavin. Every year, a new fella comes in, the average age of the team comes down. We've talked about this before, and they don't look out of place. So, and like, look at, especially with the hurling. So, like, I mean, last year Galway won the All-Ireland, and the year before Tipperary won the All-Ireland, they come back out the following year with the same team. I'd say the same starting 15. Galway, same starting 15. And now Limerick, you're looking through their team and you're going, geez, you'd be doing well to break onto their All-Ireland win team. And Jim Gavin's like, no way.
Yeah.
That All-Ireland win team will not win it for me this year. I need to bring the age down, although Limerick hurlers' age will be very young. But he just does it.
Hmm.
So, like, I mean, even if Michael Darren McCall is coming off a good year last year, Darren Gavin's ready. He's young. He's hungry. He's going to freshen this up. And James McCarthy was probably midfield more last year. He'll go back into the backs. And the thing about Darren Gavin getting midfield, if he does end up midfield, is James McCarthy goes back into the backs and a huge name loses out in the backs, lads.
Yeah.
Because John Small, Jack McCaffrey, Keane O'Sullivan and James McCarthy do not fit into three positions.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So what did it do with one of these big, huge names?
Yeah. That's the thing. There's absolutely zero fear of complacency with Dublin. And I think with Jim Gavin, you don't even have to be playing that bad.
No, he'll do it anyway.
He'll deliberately piss people off.
That's brilliant.
Oh, yeah.
Because I can only imagine the loyalty you might feel to lads that won you the All-Ireland. Jim Gavin feels no loyalty to these lads. No, but like, I mean, I don't mean that as a criticism.
No.
Like, this is managing your squad and freshening it up and it's a part of management that's very undervalued, because the easy way to go, and we see it with so many All-Ireland winning managers, well, these lads did it for me in the heat of battle, he's unproven, I know this lad can do it, I'm taking the easy option and I'm going with him this year.
The thing is, he can do it as well, because I know he has this conveyor belt of players that are just seemingly up to the level immediately, and other counties don't have kind of that wiggle room, but you're right, he does that, he's completely ruthless, and as I said, I think he deliberately pisses people off just to keep them keep them hungry and keep them motivated.
But like, I mean, Darren Gavin, now he's no relation of Jim's, he's not exactly one that every manager would pull out and say, I'm giving him a full league now. He's a gangly sub at under 21, you know what I mean? He's not, at first glance you'd be like, geez, he might need a few more years, you know what I mean? He's given him that opportunity and he's starting to flourish now. Obviously, coming into a brilliant team like that makes it easier. But again, in other counties, would Darren Gavin be getting into that big team? I don't think he would.
Maybe it's interesting you say that, because John Dively's quotes are like, you know, maybe in the next couple of years. The UCD
there
manager said something like that as well. He's a good player. Maybe in the next couple of years, he'll make his way in. But he is in this year, and Jim Gavin is putting his faith in him, and he's probably pissed Michael Darren McCauley off. But what that does, you get more out of Michael Darren McCauley then as well. And the whole panel is just hungry.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, I mean, you piss Michael Darren McCauley off. If Michael Darren McCauley puts a face on him, he misses out on getting any game time on an All-Ireland winning team. Now, that is a luxury Jim Gavin has, because no player can afford to throw a strop. You're at his beck and call. It's either, look, throw a strop, act like you're not part of this team, no minutes.
He nearly didn't play Jeremy Connolly in the 2017 final, unless he was in such bad trouble.
Look, listen, there's no doubt Jim Gavin's an outstanding manager. Big game, realistically, is the All-Ireland Club final, lads, because this is sensational. We'll talk about this here rather than Paddy Power predictions. Like, I mean, I think this is all about Cara Finn. They're going for a third win in 5 years. So it'll bring them into the third of the role in the Roll of Honour. No other club outside of Cross McGlen did it twice, and St Finbar's and UCD have put back-to-back titles. Because think about this, lads. Back-to-back titles. Start a full year with your club, win an All-Ireland club until the following March. Start back immediately into a county league and championship, have to win that, and then go through the provincial system when Connacht is a bloody really difficult. You're talking about St. Bridget's team and a Castlebar team and a Ballintubber, and all the Mayo are traditionally really strong at club level. It's not like they're winning against in a handy province or anything, and then they're back again with an All-Ireland semi-final and an All-Ireland final again. So, like, I mean, it can't be underestimated what I don't know. Like, is it crazy to say that if they win this weekend that they're up there with I'd say the best club team I've practically ever seen. Maybe Cross McGlen.
Up there with Cross McGlen for me,
yeah. They have to be. Like, I mean, they're not far off an intercounty team, really.
No, absolutely not. But the way that you put it there, but like how they kind of, Cara Finn, and I think you've mentioned this before, how ye used to approach seasons because you were so used to winning kind of provincial titles. So, but like I don't know, does he have such a big squad that he can kind of accommodate leaving people off at different times of year, giving them time off? But that commitment cannot be underestimated. The amount of time that you've put into, you basically don't have a pre-season because your season is running through Christmas and you're getting right back into the thick of it with league and provincial action as well. But like, I think we've constantly mentioned around, like on this podcast as well, about it's nearly a golden era for super clubs, and for Carfin to do what they're doing when Crokes are so good and when other clubs are so good, it's just it's amazing.
It's definitely amazing, and like, I mean, Crokes are, we've eulogised about Crokes, so it's going to be a fantastic game. There's some really good matchups. So Kieran Fitzgerald versus Kieran O'Leary. I don't think Kieran Fitzgerald is going to like marking Kieran O'Leary, because Kieran O'Leary still has that movement, and I think Kieran Fitzgerald at his age might struggle a little bit with Kieran O'Leary. You've Liam Silk versus Tony Brosnan. I think that's a guarantee. That's going to be an unbelievable. It's actually interesting reading quotes from Martin Farragher, who was talking about Tony Brosnan. And in 2015, he went to Boston and he played in a two-man full forward line with Tony Brosnan. Is that nice little little story there? I wouldn't like to be inside on those two.
The greatest full forward line in America.
Then you have Kieran Malloy. He's lined up against Brian Looney, who's an outstanding club player, or he could go across on Michal Burns. I don't think Kieran Malloy likes the right half back position, and I don't think Curra Finn are going to. I don't think either team will be messing up their formation too much for each other. I think they'll take each other on head on. Dylan Wall, an excellent number seven, will be on Michal Burns. Dahi Burke versus Dahi Casey, the two Dahis. I think that's a guaranteed matchup as well. I think Ronan Steed versus Johnny Buckley. I think that might be the aerial battle there. Burke will man mark Dottie Casey on the ground. Fionn Fitzgerald versus Ian Burke. Don't fancy Fionn Fitzgerald's afternoon there. Though he's probably their best man marker, he's not tight enough for Ian Burke. I don't think too many are. And then a very interesting one I have here for Gavin White. So who marks Gavin White? Is it Gary Sice, who used to play wing back but wouldn't have the pace for him, or to put Michal Lundy and take away from Michal Lundy's attacking kind of instincts by saying you have to follow Gavin White whenever he goes, because he has the pace to follow Gavin White?
It's interesting you said who marks Gavin White. He's
but he has to.
I think that's the way it's going to be.
It is, but like, genuinely, when I played wing back until I was about 22, and absolutely in club football and Leash, wing backs were put wing forward on me to stop me attacking. Like, that's how, like, yeah, some players you have to stop them. They're like, they're arguably a more dangerous attacker because they don't have a back marking them. Yeah. So, you know what I mean?
Sometimes the best way to mark these fellas is to put forwards on them that are constantly going to.
But then that's
them,
the game of cat and mouse. You see, the minute I'd see a good forward coming on me, I would say I will go out of my way to join every attack for the first 10 minutes and really scramble this fella's brain altogether, because he doesn't want to do that. But that's that game of half back, half forward. That's been played for a long, long time.
I thought the same about Malloy when you were asking whether he'll go on Looney or Burns. I was like, well, actually, who will go on Malloy? Because he's going to be at the 6 yard box every 2 seconds.
Yeah. Because Brian Looney and Michal Burns probably would follow Kieran Malloy better. Brian Looney is a really, really dangerous forward, but more in an attacking sense. And, like, I mean, when you look at the Crokes half forward line, it probably is made up of more, like, free spirits and attacking players rather than kind of players that are going to be following Kieran Malloy. But you have to follow Kieran Malloy because we've talked enough on the show, but this lad ends up in the 6 yard box at the end of every move. Ah, lads, it's a brilliant final. Like, it really, really is. Yeah. Like, I mean, two heavyweights. I haven't looked forward to a final more. I can't remember the last time I've looked forward to a final where this. I must check the betting. Did you see the betting? I haven't checked the betting. It's probably about 50-50. Oh, there it is. So Curra Finn are 10-11 and Dr. Crokes are 6-5. The draw is 15-2. So there's nothing in it.
No.
So the Paddy Power are absolutely matching that up. So will we get a little tip off the two of you, lads? Not that it's going to make too much of a difference.
I'll stick with the Westerners. I'll go for Curra Finn.
I think Curra Finn.
Now, remember, Crokes hammered them 2 years ago in the Gaelic Grounds. This was Curra Finn going full through from a winning year on to the next year as well. And often you think, oh, well, the favourites will win it. And then the hindsight analysis is, it's very hard to do those back to back. They were just a fresher, more hungry. They were a fresher, more hungrier team.
We call that Monday show. I just think they're both like the best, and it's class that they're playing each other. But I think I said this before, with Corfin are just a bit more functional, whereas Crokes, you use the word free spirits, they're both devastating, but Crokes are a bit more off the cuff, whereas Corfin seems like...
Functional seems like such an insult to Corfin.
No, it's like a machine, like the way they play football. Like, it's a beautiful machine. I always think about the... I know you can't really compare games across the years, but both of them played Stockneil in a final, and Curra Finn just batted them aside like they weren't even there. And
Curra Finn's two most recent wins have been the annihilations of Stockneil and Nemo in finals. Croke Park suits Curra Finn, there's no doubt about that. And they have better age profile of experience than Crokes. Crokes scraped over Slocknail, but now that was, there was a lot of pressure on them that year because they had been the nearly men. So who are you going to go for, Conan?
Corrifin.
I'll go for Corrifin too. A full house for Corrifin. And of course on Monday, me and Conan, when we're in here, we'll be like, ah, well look, it was really obvious all along, wasn't it?
They had right. Cooper on the bench.
The strength in depth. All right, we'll come back with Sean Powter.
I work as a policeman at Garda Síochána down in Store Street, and I'm coming back out and there's a cohort of loyal Tyrone fans still up in the stand as you come back out, and they're roaring at me, "Hey, Coffrey, you free state bastard." And next thing I hear, "You have no fucking jurisdiction up here."
So Sean Powter made his comeback for Cork against Meath 2 weeks ago after a year out with a hamstring injury, and he joins us on the show now. It's good to be back, Sean.
Unreal. It's been a long 13, 14 months, like, but it's finally great to be back in the pitch and playing some part at least.
So how did it take 13 or 14 months? I remember the game. It was actually On Air Sport against Tipperary, the first round of the league last year, and you went off with a hamstring injury, and I was reading reports after it, and it was diagnosed for 3 months. How did it end up being 14?
Because I did the same tear 3 or 4 times. So every time I went back, it was either in like the first or second game back, I'd tear it again and start the rehab all over again. So it was just, I just did the same injury 3 or 4 times in total.
Gee, 4 times in total and in the exact same area?
Exact same spot, yeah. So it was literally just the exact same injury 4 times.
My God. And like, I mean, were you just over anxious to get back too soon, or were you not, you didn't have it back strong enough, or just this is just terribly bad luck?
I suppose a bit of everything, but then like the fourth time round, we like the physios, like the Cork physio, decided like something's not right here. So I went over to England and met Professor Haddad and the physio over there, and he kind of, we did a lot of testing, and it showed that like the hamstring, one of the hamstring muscles, wasn't properly activated when I sprinted. So every time I went to go flat out, it would just rip. So that's the difference between this rehab and all the other rehabs before.
Right. Now, I'm very interested in this, Sean, because I've had terrible luck with my hamstrings myself. So what was the difference between this rehab and the other rehabs?
All the other rehabs were just focused on strengthening up the tendon, which I tore. While this rehab now, it was focused on making the whole tendon longer instead of, they've made it longer and stronger at the same time, if you know what I mean.
Right. So how would you do that?
Instead of just, there were 3 main exercises. It was like just literally I did 3 exercises every day. They were called the slider, the glider and the extender. And I do them every day now. So, and like that they just extend the whole tendon itself rather than just strengthening it, which deadlifts and squats and that kind of stuff would only do.
Ah, okay. So a bit of stretching involved, basically, just to dumb it down.
Just to dumb it down. Yeah, fancy words for stretching, yeah.
So, like, I mean, like, you must have been at your wit's end when this happened the fourth time. Like, I mean, or even coming back the fifth time, that, you know, that fear you have before you go completely flat out on a hamstring when you're not sure it's going to take it or not.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I think I was kind of missing a kind of fear at the start. I kind of said, "Geez, it's fine now, so I'll go through like it was before the injury." And I reckon that's kind of played a part in tearing it each time. But this time it's been a lot slower. We've added an extra month to the rehab, and like I've only been playing 20 minutes each game rather than been thrown in the deep end, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so you got back playing with your club at the end of last year. I think it was 8 months in total.
Yeah, that was actually against the Bears. I actually wasn't supposed to be playing that. Again, I just summoned myself onto the pitch because we were doing like 3 or 4 points, and let's just say the physio wasn't pleasing me at all.
And you know, coming on as a sub in a club match, you probably wouldn't have that same, you know, intensive warm up done that you might have at inter-county level where you're being monitored more. So it's more
absolutely.
Risky.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd say, like, that day now, I only warmed up for 10 minutes and then was thrown in. And I, that was one of the reasons I tore it again that day. But now, like, the physios and strength and conditioning coaches require, just they're watching everything I do and just making sure I'm doing literally everything I'm doing. They're watching it and making sure I'm doing everything perfect.
Yeah, by the sounds of you, Sean, you might need a 24-hour security bodyguard to make sure... Come here.
Yeah.
So we talked with Brian Hurley here on the show 2 years ago at this stage now. So I'm sure he's been a help, like, because you know what it's like when you're out injured and you're on the outside of the squad and you don't feel part of it. And especially with you, your hopes are getting up that you're back and then you're gone back again. So, like, I mean, who helped you psychologically, I suppose? Like, would Brian have helped you out or would it be more the manager or sports psychologists?
It was mainly Brian Hurley and Danny Holland, the former rugby player.
Oh yeah,
he's an Irish nutritionist, like, so he was very instrumental in kind of just like how to stay positive. Like he can't play anymore, and he's still like extremely positive about life and everything in general. And Brian was just like, keep the faith, it will get right eventually. Just listen to Colin, don't do anything extra.
Yeah, so you really listened to that advice then when it came to the Finn Bars in the Cork quarter final.
Yeah, I've learned this time that physios know better than me.
Come here, because you're coming off an absolutely brilliant year. It was a terrible time for it to have happened to you, because 2017 was a sensational year for you. You played really well against Kerry in the Munster final, and even better then against Mayo in the qualifiers. You made the international rules. You got shortlisted for Young Player of the Year. So to miss that, I'm sure in your own head you were thinking, I need to back that good year up with another good year, and then you find yourself kind of gone.
Yeah, it was kind of going from one extreme to the next. Like the highs of Mayo, Kerry, making the international rules team, and then out for 3 or 4 months in your first game back at Cork. It was a new experience, but I think it will stand to me in the long run. I've learned a lot about myself and a lot about other aspects of my life. So that's the only way I could have twisted into a positive.
Yeah, maybe. Were we going to see a new role for you last year? That one game you played against Tipperary, you were at centre forward. Was Ronan going to try you out in the forwards?
Yeah, I play forward with Douglas, and he's from my local club, Douglas, as well. So I think he was kind of seeing how it would turn out. And I think I've been playing there for a bit. I came on against Meade centre forward as well. So I think he's penciled me in for a forward rather than a half back now.
Okay, because I was going to ask you, Dad, was it a forward again this year? You've been brought on, but so how long did you get in the two games you were brought on? Like, are you looking just kind of, you know, just ease into it gently, I suppose?
Yeah, the first game against me, it was 20 minutes, and against Tipperary, it was 20 minutes. So hopefully, you know, against Donegal, I'll get another 10, hopefully, but that's up to see how the game goes.
Yeah.
Up to management, really, but yeah, we're trying to up it gradually rather than going from rehab running straight into a game, which I did the last few times.
Yeah, no, I agree with this approach this time, Sean. I have to say, I think that's probably the sensible one. There's been a bit of a change in tactics for Cork this year. Obviously, you missed last year, and like, I saw a quote from you at the start of last year where you were talking about Ronan bringing in a new approach to be free and enjoy the game of football, which is what we're doing this year, is what you said at the start of 2018 before that Tipperary game. This year there's been a bit of a change in approach, right? I presume it's after the Munster final hammering to Kerry and then the Tyrone game as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Like the hammer we got to Tyrone and Kerry, something needed to change. So we kind of looked at the defensive aspect of football, and unfortunately it hasn't worked so far, but it worked against Fermanagh, and it worked against Kildare as well, but the results aren't showing it. So we'll hopefully now rectify and change a few things, tweak a few things for Donegal, and hopefully get the win we really badly need.
Yeah, you do really need it. But, like, I mean, for Cork to change to that kind of a system, it's probably difficult, because none of you would have played that system coming up underage at all. That would be kind of unusual for Cork teams to play defensively underage. Would that be right?
Yeah, it's more of attacking in Cork, like our neighbours Kerry. But like when you saw the results against Kerry and Tyrone, we needed to try something different, because the attacking approach wasn't really working. Well, you could say went too extreme, but I think Ronan knows exactly what he's talking about, and we believe in Ronan, so we'll do. We'd run through a brick wall if he told us that.
Yeah, no, I'm sure you would. So if you're playing centre half forward in this new system, you're pretty much getting back and blocking up a hole or two and then breaking forward with it. Well, I suppose that would suit your game with the speed you have anyways.
Yeah, absolutely. It just make an impact on the game and like turn over the ball and we all go as one instead of just drips and drabs, which has kind of been what we have to... It takes a while to get used to the system as well, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
because... It's not going to work straight away, like...
Because getting the bodies back behind the ball and tackling with intensity and turning it over is probably the easy side of it. It's what you do when you win it, when you get it turned over.
It's when you need the three or four players to go with the fellow with the ball. That's where our problem has been.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. What do you put the difference down with Cork? You've obviously lost a lot of leaders: Michael Shields, Colm O'Neill, Donnac O'Connor, Alan O'Connor, Aidan Walsh has gone with the hurlers. Like, I mean, in this decade, you've won 5 out of 9 Munster under-21s. You were on the team in 2016 and you barely lost to Mayo in the final. Why is it not translating to senior level? Like, I mean, you've as good a record underage as Kerry, yet they're flying it at senior and you seem to be going backwards. Like, the underage doesn't tally with how the senior has kind of fallen back.
Yeah, I'd say that's a question that it's on everyone's mind. And I don't think anyone really has the answer to. But when it comes to senior, I really, honest answers, I don't know. The players we have there now is the same caliber as there was 5 or 6 years ago. We just can't seem to. Consistency is the main problem. We'd go out one day, we play unbelievable, and the next day we'd be one of the worst teams in the country. Like, I don't know, consistency really, or perhaps a lack of belief. I think a lack of belief with the amount of setbacks we've had over the past few years is kind of like, say, we conceded 2 goals against Clare and it was kind of like, oh, here we go again.
Right.
Kind of scenario.
So even if you have a bit of confidence, it's brittle enough. It just doesn't take too much to knock you back into that kind of... Hey, it's unusual for Cork people or Cork footballers to lack belief.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. It's hard for the young fellas coming, like the new fellas, they've grown up seeing Cork winning and they're part of a team that's not doing so well. So it's hard for the young fellas to get the belief saying that we belong here. I remember my first year when I was going into the dressing room with Donnac O'Connor and Colm O'Neill, like, I'm like, geez, I don't know, should I be here at all? Like,
yeah, well, I suppose, yeah. There's not too many. Is there any of the All-Ireland winning team left really now? Most of them are gone.
The only one left is Paul Kerrigan. He's the last one.
Paul Kerrigan is right, yeah. He's still there. So, like, I mean, you nearly need to be taking a leadership role at this stage and you're only 21.
Yeah, that's what Donnac rang me when he retired and he was like, you're one of the main leaders now, so you should start leaning by example. And it's only my fourth year now, like, and I didn't think, I thought I'd, you know, be like a settling in period, kind of watch the older fellas, see how they do it, and then learn from them and take it in a few more years. But look, we'll take it as it goes.
Are you comfortable with that leadership role, or?
I am. Yeah. One thing I hate is talking in public, but I talk to them individually and just say, "Come on, we need more from you," that kind of way. But I wouldn't say it in front of the group. I wouldn't be a fan of talking in front of a group now.
Really? Well, you're talking in front of a lot of people now, but it's different, I suppose. It's on the phone. You sound okay to me.
No, I get all squeaky and high-pitched when I'm talking in front of a group. I wouldn't like that, no.
Come here. Paddy Kelly talked about issues with pitches. He talked about, when he retired now, he talked about issues with gyms where the players had to organise the gym themselves. In general, kind of painting a picture of a not high-performance environment. Has that improved?
Yeah, dramatically. We're based in Parky Creeve now, so we train on the Astro, and then when we need the gym, we go into the gym in Parky Creeve as well. So that's where we train every Tuesday, Thursday,
okay,
and Saturday if you don't have a match. So we're literally just, everything's based in Parky Creeve, where we have the gym as well, and we get grub there and everything.
Okay, so that's important. Like, I mean, a lot of it psychologically is that you're being treated right, you know, because that if you don't feel that you've got a good setup, that's an excuse players will take, you know, to maybe not put in the effort they should be.
Yeah, I suppose, but I'd kind of go against what Paddy was saying. I thought the setup. It was makeshift, but I thought it was quite, it kind of bonded us together, if you know what I mean.
Right.
Kind of like, this is what we have. We'll get on with it and we'll fight through it. We'll go through it. Like, we kind of had that mentality rather than sulking about it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, no, I didn't really think of it like that. Like, I mean, it's a weird one. Like you said with Cork, the every year for the last maybe 5 years since that Kerry, you should have beaten Kerry in 2015. So many years of that, 3 or 4 years. And it's been going backwards in the league and maybe in the championship. But you've always pulled one big performance. I know against Mayo in Croke Park a couple of times, Mayo 2 years ago. Like you give yourselves enough hope the previous year to build on it the following year, although last year was the exception to that.
Yeah. I just think it's back to consistency. Like, we know we can get those performances week in, week out, but it's just finding the ability to do that is the problem. We shoot the lights out. We shot the lights out against Mayo, and the week before we were beaten by Kerry by 11 points. So, like, it's just finding the balance between getting things right and fixing what's wrong.
Yeah, I don't even want to ask you this question because I don't know how you'll feel about it, but what is relegation going to do to this squad, or what would it do? You're on 3 points along with, it looks like it's between yourselves, Tip and Clare. Tip and Clare play each other in the last game, so one of them will get points out of that. So you need to get something out of your next two games, and it's Donegal and Armagh. Donegal at home, Armagh away. You have to get something out of one or both of those games.
Yeah, well, the way we're talking, if we win both of the games, we're out of relegation. So that's the way we're looking at it. Just win. If we win, we beat Donegal, we beat Armagh.
It's in your own hands,
it's in our own hands, basically, which is kind of a very good scenario to have, considering we lost our last three games and won against Tip. So we're kind of lucky it's in our own hands at this stage.
Yeah, definitely. And Clare playing Tip does you no harm then as well in the last game, because that's what puts it in your own hands, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. And if Armagh don't win this weekend, they'll be brought into the fight as well, because we've them away up in Crossmaglen. So they could be brought into the relegation battle as well.
Yeah, it's definitely, I'd say, like, I mean, when you initially went down to Division 2, you're talking about getting back up. But this year, especially Division 2, is incredibly difficult.
Yeah, absolutely. At the start of the year, our aim was to get out of Division 1, like, because we thought we had the caliber of players, but just the way the results kind of panned out, we were rock bottom now. But I think the win against Tip was really badly needed, but I think it'll give us the confidence to, like, know we can win games, even though it was a bit nervy towards the end, but we can win games and, like, hopefully bring that confidence to a big team like Donegal now.
Yeah,
on Saturday night.
Exactly. Right, well, let's come here. Best of luck against Donegal, and more importantly, best of luck with the injury, and hopefully you'll stay injury free for the year and see where it takes you from there.
Perfect. Thanks a million.
Thanks for taking the call, Sean.
Cheers, Colm. Thanks.
Bit of advice he gave me back then was, we were in the Glenroy on a night out, and I'd never met him before, and he put his arm around me and he said, "You won't go too far wrong if you win the ball and give it to me." I said, "All right, well, okay."
That's great advice.
Yeah, it was. For you.
Paddy Power predictions. We might just run through these divisions, lads, because Division 1, 2 and 3 is very interesting. 4, forget about it. Leitrim Derry in the mix with 2 games to go. No more to see here. Division 4 is done. Division 1 still has loads to play for. So we're looking at who gets into the final. We're looking Kerry and Dublin, obviously very strong favourites for that at this stage. Dublin have Tyrone at home and Cavan away. So I'd say that's a done deal, Kerry and Dublin. Sorry about that now, Connor. Because especially Mayo have Kerry away and Monaghan at home. Two really difficult games. And I don't see Galway getting up there. Galway could potentially get up there, but I don't see Dublin losing their last two games. And that's
no,
Dublin, that's
not
Dublin straight through. At the bottom, it's definitely interesting because Monaghan play Cavan at home in Clonus, and we flagged up this game a little while ago that it's a local derby. It's going to be a dour dour dogfight because both of them are in relegation problems. Some interesting stats on Cavan. This is before the Tyrone game, and they got hammered by Tyrone. Maybe a little bit misleading the hammering. They were down at four at half time after playing against the wind, and then Tyrone came out, scored the first two games or first 2 points of the second half, and Killian Clark was sent off. Game over. Cavan always lose to Tyrone. It said they just dropped their heads. Surprising for them to drop their heads if they did that with a new manager, because even if you want to drop your head, you still can't do that.
I was reading a report that they went more defensive than when they went 14 men.
Yeah.
So they sort of went under a shell a bit
and just damaged them.
Gave it off. But there was some stats on their scoring and their defending before that Tyrone game. So the Tyrone game obviously messed them up compared to their last time during Division 1. So they were averaging in 2017, they were averaging 15 points a game, or they were conceding 15 points a game. So they're now conceding 14.5. This was before Tyrone, which they conceded 115, which will bring that up. But in the attacking one was interesting. They averaged 12 points a game in 2017. This is under Matty McLeanan. And before the Tyrone game, they were averaging 14.25 points a game. So there's a clear improvement there. Now the Cavan, they only scored 9 against Tyrone, so that might have been dragged down there. Mm. But I'd say the Tyrone game, Cavan have been competing well up until this point. Like, I mean, they did well against Kerry at home, beat Roscommon at home, which are a real bogey team for them. You know, haven't been disgracing themselves at all. The Tyrone, that I think they just have an Indian sign over Cavan. Tyrone have. Yeah. So I don't know. I'd like to see Cavan on television to see what they're really doing. You probably saw them against Mayo.
I thought they were quite impressive, actually. Right. Well, like, Mayo were kind of always comfortable as soon as Evan Regan got a goal in the second half, or in the first half, sorry, and it was like once it went in, nobody was sure whether it was a free out or what. He kind of went in with the keeper, maybe fouled him, but it was given anyway. The Mayo were just comfortable after that, but they hadn't, and this was Mayo on the back of two really positive wins. Mayo were on a roll at the time, and they didn't really have it easy. Cavan had a lot of chances that night. And I thought, like, McVitie's had been playing centre back for them. I think he has been playing centre back for them throughout the league. And I think Conor Revel was beside him, got 2 points from play. Conor Moynagh came on, was impressive too. But they missed. Jerk Afrey got man the match that night. He was actually very good. But the chance that the Cavan had in their attack, and this is only based on one game, but they just looked a bit wasteful to me. And I suppose the thing with Cavan, while they're competitive, they can't be afforded to be wasteful. They have to be taking every single chance they got.
Yeah.
But that's the thing with them. Like, I remember 2 years ago, both with Cavan and Roscommon, thinking that they looked like relegation fodder 2 years ago, whereas neither of them look like relegation fodder this time. They've actually been far more competitive. But I don't know. I can't see Cavan beating Monaghan. If they don't, they're going back down again. But there has been, as you said, but like, not a whole lot in the stats, and like, the stats are all well and good, but the context is they still have only 2 points. But like, based on like their campaign this season so far compared to their campaign 2 years ago, I think it's a lot more positive for Cavan.
Yeah, well, on the scoring, I think they got 3 points the last time. Now they've Monaghan away and Dublin at home, so they're probably going to go down, if we're being honest. Like, they just simply have to beat Monaghan. There's no two ways about that. If they beat Monaghan, Roscommon have Galway away and if Kerry at home, so they could go, you know, just that one win against Monaghan could see them safe, you know, because Monaghan are going to be in trouble and they'll have beaten Monaghan on the head to head. Monaghan can't actually overtake them if they beat Monaghan, so there's a huge amount riding on this game.
Yeah, and they've upped those scoring stats there without Gareth McKiernan and Kevin O'Reilly. Like, it was the two big attackers for them, and Killian Clark, as you say, coming off, it's just too important around the middle. But Mickey Graham, like, we had him on the show during the Leinster Club, and very good. We always, every time you talk about Cavan, you talk about that under 21 success that they had, the 4 in a row back in 2010 or whatever. But like, he was very good at talking about how they didn't develop enough forwards back then, and they lost forwards because they were going for short term success. They had these defensive systems trying to win like underage titles, and they did it, but then for like the long term, but they couldn't sustain it, and the senior, they didn't have enough quality coming through because they just had defenders playing in the forward line. So obviously Mickey Graham, everybody knows about his career, they're a classy corner forward, and that's obviously what he's trying to do. He's trying to get them to attack more.
Well, they've Martin Riley and they've McVitie in their half forward line. If you tried to tell me they're better off suited inside their own 45, well, that's nonsense, because they're not, because they're both creative and they're both dangerous players. So again, we want to see a little bit more from Cavan, but I think because of who they're playing and because of the last time we saw this, I think this game was on television the last time, or at least we saw highlights of it on the League Sunday. It was a dour, I think it was 10-all or something. But this, I think this will be, at this time of the year between two neighbours, I give Monaghan the sneaky nod on that one. Galway play Roscommon. This is a huge game for Roscommon. Roscommon need to win it to stay up, obviously, because they have Kerry in their last game, although Kerry could be could have qualified at that stage, so we don't know. Galway versus Roscommon, lads, who we go for here? You'd fancy, I'd give Roscommon a little sneak on this one.
I was going to go Galway. I just thought, like, it's going to be a big weekend for Monaghan. I think they'll beat Cavan and then they'll go out of the relegation zone, because I thought Roscommon won't beat Galway. Might draw. I'm not going to rule out a draw, like, I never will. But
I give Roscommon a great shout, but I'm going to go, with it being in Pearse Stadium, I'm going to go for a narrow Galway win.
Okay, so Dublin play Tyrone in Croke Park, and obviously the big thing with Tyrone now is Matty Donnelly in with Peter Hart in the inside line. Two of their main ball carrying half forwards are now playing inside, and Mickey Hart was at an event recently, and he says, "I'm not saying we throw out all our small players, but we need a better balance. So you don't have a line." He's talking about the full forward line. "We don't have a line where it's the same kind of skillful, accurate, fast players who need the precise pass. Maybe you need to mix and match with the bigger and stronger players who can handle an average ball." Mickey, if you'd listened to me 2 years ago on this show, you would have saved yourself 2 years of figuring this out, buddy. This has been what's been said here for a long, long time with Tyrone. So he says you can't have them all big, strong men either, because they wouldn't be as deft or as astute as finding the scoring opportunities as the Mark Bradleys, the Lee Brennans, the Dara Canavans or the Darren McCurries. These boys are very skillful players, but it's a team game and we need horses for courses and certain mixes. Thank God Mickey Hart has finally realised this. Mark Bradley, incidentally, isn't on the panel and he's a really good forward. He's studying or something like that. So they still have, with Peter Hart and Matty Donnelly, her two big lumps of fellas. Like, Peter Hart might be not that tall, but he's a bloody beast of a man. You've Dara Canavan, for example, playing off the two of them or playing in there with them. And again, I'm starting to get enthusiastic about Tyrone. I don't want to be down in Tyrone all the time. I don't want to be down in Galway. Just wake up, lads. Smell the coffee. You know, Mickey Hart's finally, the penny has dropped. Let's get back on the Tyrone bandwagon.
Yeah, like the Matty Donnelly one's interesting. Like, they never seem to stick with it.
They played their underage. Yeah, they tried him last year there for a while and never stuck to
it. And we
got
all excited last year as well. Like, oh, this is the answer. And then they just bring him back. He's very important around the middle. But yeah, if they can sacrifice him, they really should be looking like to do that, because like Richie Donnelly didn't really work inside for them.
Not in the big games.
No, I don't think so.
He played well through the qualifiers. But
he could still win ball in the big games, but then again, what do you do when you win the ball? Well, Matty Donnelly wins the ball, he's never standing still. Like, do you know when some big lads win it and they just invite contact or asking to be like hit? But Matty Donnelly wins it, he's always moving and he's driving into somebody or popping it off, and it's just a different sort of notch of quality up there, like, you know, alongside Peter Hart. But I just hope they stick with it, and I have a feeling they won't going away.
I really hope, because, like, I mean, this is a totally new position for Matty Donnelly. Well, no, he's played there underage, but the game has changed so much, he needs to learn this all over again. But when he played underage, he might not have had sweepers to deal with. He needs to figure out, where do I make my runs, along with Mickey Hart, who wants to tell him, obviously, if Mickey Hart does that one-on-one coaching, this is what I'm expecting from you, this is what I want from you, I'm going to give you 6-7 games in there to do it. And Matty Donnelly needs to go home after every training, go home after every game, sit down, think, what worked today? What is my identity in there? Am I going to be a scorer? Maybe. Am I going to be a purely ball winner laying it off to lads? Probably. Do you know what I mean? He has to realize, where am I making most of my runs from? Where am I making them to? All these things. Yeah, like, I mean, you have to define your own role in your own head, because any position I played on, you almost have to figure this out for yourself. What works for me? Because managers don't coach you. Let's be honest. Yeah. How many times were you actually coached by a manager too much into a game plan? You have to figure this out yourself.
And it's not as if there's a prototype for every position either. Like, do you know what I mean? I think it can work with the two lads inside. But my thing would be, and especially with Dublin this weekend, is the ball getting into them in the first place, and whether Tyrone are going to let the ball in early enough, or whether they're just going to run it. Because just going back to when Mayo played Dublin in Croke Park a few weeks ago, Mayo had zero presence in the half forward line, and then any ball that was going into the full forward line was under pressure, it was coming from too far out,
then
we had no runners off it. So if you're going to put Matty Donnelly and Peter Hart inside, are they going to be fighting for dirty ball, do you know, like
that's going to
be
wings,
under serious pressure? That's the thing. And like that, like for me, for Matty Hart and Peter Hart, or Matty Donnelly and Peter Hart to work inside for Tyrone, it just requires a completely different change in mindset from the way Tyrone play. Like, does this mean that they're suddenly going to become this, you know, total football, kicking the ball in early? Are they going to continuously run the ball as they've done in the past? So I think it can work, but I'm holding out until I see
the whole game plan needs to change. Yeah. And this is the thing, and we've analysed this to death, and I don't see it the penny dropping enough. Without a half forward line, the two men, say it's Matty Donnelly and Peter Hart left inside, right? There'd be a sweeper standing right in front of them because of the way Tyrone played, would be giving that up, right? So they're standing inside. There's a big gap. So where can you run to get the ball? The only place to run is the two wings. What good are you doing out there? So you get the ball out by the wing, by the sideline. You're too far. You can't even give it to a runner, because what does he have to do? Loop outside the field to come in? They can't run at angles off you because there's no angle from the wing. So, like, I mean, your whole game plan of having two fellas inside there is a waste of time, because the initial one, the fella that needs to break to the wing, is the fella on the 45. Yeah. When he breaks to the wing, there's no panic with that because he turns and then he'll look for clever diagonal balls into your two men in there. Like, I mean, that's just... It won't work without... And I'd actually go so far as saying, I've said this 2 years ago, two men on the half-forward line have to do the break into the wings. Let them break to the wings. But the two men inside absolutely should never run to the wings. That's not what you're there for. Mm. You need to, one, go first and pull the sweeper, and the other lad, look for the ball in the scoring zone. Like, I mean... This is obvious. So unless we see Tyrone joining up all the dots, you probably are wasting Matty Donnelly.
Yeah. Remember the Leinster final? I need to stop using that example, because Leash got well beaten in the end, but it made it look so simple in the first half. It was one Kingston on the 45, kick it to him, he won it, he's a ball winner. And another Kingston inside, kick it to him, he won it, he's a ball winner.
Yeah.
And it was just so simple. Like, they just won it and won it.
And I remember James Horan's first year with Mayo. Like, Alan Dillon religiously held the 45 and made runs left and right. So he never allowed that huge gap to develop.
Yeah.
He just didn't. Alan Dillon doesn't want to go back there now.
Yeah.
But if you pick three lads with an appetite for that and getting the easy handy ball, then your disconnect is there, and then Mayo, you know what I mean? Like against Dublin. You have to have a man. And the thing about staying on the 45 is, it's a feckin' hard job, because you're constantly having to break and make those hard runs, and often those hard runs are taking you to not glamorous places like the wings, and you're basically doing an awful lot of donkey work. And even if you get it at the wing and you can't kick it in, by the time you get it to the wing, someone will be up in support, pop it to them, and then let them give it into the two. You know, you're doing a really difficult job. Jason Doherty does it too. It's a tough bloody job.
Yeah.
And you know, you have to analyse it well to actually be able to spot him, because he'll give it into Andy Moore and he'll score and be like, Andy Moore's brilliant. He did nothing without Jason Doherty. Yeah. And that was the role Doherty played against Kerry in Croke Park.
Everybody should go back and watch that game again. Yeah. Just like this ball winning masterpiece from Jason Doherty. And like, he didn't, like, did he score much? He just won all these dirty balls.
I remember Tig Morley on him specifically in the replay. Because as soon as the whistle blew, Tig Morley kind of started at him. They had a bit of a row, and Jason Doherty went on to have another brilliant game.
But Andy Moore scored 1-5 in play that day. Yeah. Because Jason Doherty was winning the
ball. Because the gap was bridged. And Andy Moore was making the clever runs close to goal and getting good ball. Like, I mean, that was the big thing. We'll have to move on here. We're getting sucked into a Mayo Mayo chat here now, even though we started with Tyrone.
Is there an hour forward in Mayo?
Kerry versus Mayo.
This is my type of show.
We'll focus on Kerry here, boys, because the big news is that Clifford's back in the mix, right? So here we are. We've Clifford, we've Paul Geaney, and we've Tommy Walsh. Mickey Hart, exactly thing. Three little small men don't work, three big men don't work. Because I'll tell you, three lads won't work, because none of these three fellas want to make that hard break, and none of the three of them want to be the one that plays out in front. These three are all deep lying full forwards. So I don't think all three of these can play in a full forward line together. Your dynamic won't be what it should be. Who's breaking first? You really want the whole... And Kerry have a working half forward line now, you know, so I can't see how three of these lads left inside.
I'd like to see it first before I rule it out that it can't work.
I think, because I was jotting down some of their options, and I think Peter Keane will definitely stick with the two wing forwards, like Dara Moynihan and Gavin O'Brien. Michael Geaney and Johnny Lyon come in there as well. Like, and they might play that. Sean O'Shea obviously stays.
Michael Burns will be back soon.
Burns is another one. So Sean O'Shea stays at 11, and then obviously Geaney and Clifford have to play. So I think it's between James O'Donoghue, Walsh, and Stephen O'Brien for that last spot. Probably going to be O'Brien
and O'Donoghue at least offer that break out towards the ball. Because when you break out towards the ball, you're bringing the sweeper with you, because the sweeper will usually go for the obvious. That's what the sweeper's there for. Because when you look up, right, the obvious ball is usually what the sweeper will try and cut out. And a lot of teams then are not good at the less obvious ball, like the diagonal ball or whatever, and that's what the sweeper probably can't cover. but you need someone there to engage that sweeper early doors. And I'm not sure any of the... Does Geeney want to make a break knowing that that's not really... taking himself out of scoring zone, knowing that that's just going to be taking one for the team? And if he doesn't, if he does get it out there, potentially have to take on a man. You know, none of those three. I think it's unbelievable for Kerry to have those three options. I can't see the three of them playing in the same team.
So who loses out? Or do you like decide on the game? Do you decide that like maybe Tommy Welsh will suit Dublin because we want to let direct ball in?
Yeah, now he's Tommy Walsh. Here's something that I think this has been slipping into. This is her. Tommy Welsh is a Kilkenny hurler. As far as I'm concerned, Tommy Walsh is a Kerry footballer. But now they're starting to call Tommy Walsh Tommy Welsh. Welsh is a hurling name. Welsh has no business on the football show.
I think I said Walsh there, even though Welsh, we pronounce it Welsh back in Mayo as well.
All Walsh's Welsh's
Welsh,
are
yeah.
Really?
Welsh, yeah.
What if Tommy Walsh's name is Tommy Walsh? You would just call him Tommy Welsh.
How do you know it's different? Like, how do you know?
Sometimes there's an E after the H at the end. I don't know, does that affect the pronunciation? Walsh, but sometimes spelled like that. Yeah,
because I'm confused about this. It's Tommy Walsh, right? But anyways, listen, we're moving away now. Right, so that's all we have for Division 1, lads. I'm not sure how much time we have here because Division 2 is really heating up as well. Clare play Mead, Cork play Donegal, Kildare play Tip, and Armagh play Fermanagh. Fermanagh, interestingly, are obviously flying high, but they've got two disastrous games left. They're away to Armagh and away to Mead. Now, they could get lucky if Mead beat Clare this weekend. Mead will be through already. So that could see Fermanagh through if they beat Mead away. But, like, I mean, they have two difficult games. Armagh away won't be easy. But having said that, Armagh's style of a kicking game will feed right into Fermanagh's tactics as well. And while Armagh might be a difficult game for Fermanagh to go away to, arguably Fermanagh will be Armagh's most difficult game.
Yeah, I suppose it depends how... Because Armagh look against Donegal, they lost, but they look a lot smarter and a lot more solid. And like, I think Hall and Vernon in the wing forward spots is perfect because they can get back up the pitch as well as get back and tackle aggressively. So I don't know. I was sort of thinking that Armagh, because Fermanagh do still like commit men forward when they have the ball.
When they have the ball.
And like they're trying not to give it away. And I think if Armagh can turn it over, which I do believe they can, because they're big enough and physical enough, then they can kick it. Then the boys can maybe free themselves up. Jamie Clark can come into his own. And
arguably, from kickouts is probably where Armagh might get a little bit of joy. Yeah. Armagh are 8-15 favourites. I wouldn't have them 8-15 favourites. James Morgan's appeal failed, and they have a lot of injuries as well. I'd worry for Armagh against Fermanagh. Fermanagh are 2-1. Outsiders. I always have to laugh when you talk about Fermanagh and Rory Gallagher. We keep talking about this and, oh, we'd be beaten by 15 points if we didn't play like this, and, oh, look, we're making the most of the resources. You know, Fermanagh made the All-Ireland semi-final in 2004 and should have beaten Mayo in it.
Yeah.
Went to a replay. What about the resources then? Or did they have to play like that then? They had some fantastic forwards back then, and they made the All-Ireland quarter-final as recently as 2015. Playing a modern style of football, but absolutely not a Black Death style of football. Tomás Corrigan and Sean Quigley were absolutely 100% forwards, and one or two more.
They got plotted off by Dublin.
I think they scored something like 215 against Dublin.
Pushed Cluxton over the line.
That's right.
Yeah. Oh yeah, Tomás Corrigan did. Tomás Corrigan. And then celebrated it. I think it was. Well, Tomás Corrigan got a goal that day as well, and celebrated all that when they were losing. So that's why he was slagged off. But this is the thing, and like, I mean, why this narrative has to surround Fermanagh that they're useless without putting all their men inside the 45, I completely disagree with that. They're a bloody good team, Fermanagh, and absolutely should not be told that without playing this extreme, you're useless. Like, it's or you'll be beaten by 10 or 15 points. Like, I mean,
it's only when you watch some of the highlights and like you see Kieran Horrigan just swinging it over the outside of his boot and Ryan Jones bombing for it, and Owen Donnelly comes off the bench and you're like, Jesus, and these
Connell,
are Ulster
Connell Jones, like, and they've McCusker, who's utility, like Aidan Breen. Like, I mean, they've a whole load of good top level Division 2 level players. So they wouldn't be beaten. Now, I don't want to repeat myself again, but anyways, and there's proof that without playing like this, they have reached all Ireland semi-finals and all quarter-finals. So, like, I mean, that's that put to bed. You don't need to play like that. And the other good thing, funny thing about Rory Gallagher, I'm going to get him on the show because I want to challenge him on this, because this is his answer for everything. Rory Gallagher, oh, well, our resources for Man are a small county and you're getting the best out of the resources and I'm just working with what I've been given. He managed Kilcar, who were a sensational team and played way as well. He had Donegal playing this way. Rory plays this way anyway. Yeah. Stop this poor man Fermanagh act and stop telling Fermanagh that they're no good if they don't play like this, because there's actual recent history that they can.
Yeah, and you can be critical of the way they play. Like, just because that, like, Rory Gallagher might go on about resources, whatever, that doesn't mean that you can't be critical or that you have to admit that you can admit that you don't enjoy this style of play as well. And just looking, they've 52 points, I think, scored after five games. I think it's the lowest across all four divisions. Like fair play to them. Listen,
their defensive obviously is the best. Their defensive
record. Of course,
There's no doubt. Division 3 then, lads. So, there's an awful lot up for grabs here as well. Down play Carlow away and they have Loud at home. So you'd imagine Down should go through as group winners. Then it's between Westmeath, Loud and Laois, I would imagine. Anybody else is out of it. Laois have Offaly away and Carlow at home. That would get them to 10 points. They'd have to hope that Westmeath, who have Loud away and Longford at home, which, you know, they could drop points to Loud away. Loud have Westmeath at home and Down away. Look, there's Westmeath, Loud and Laois have all, I would say, very close to equal opportunities of joining Down, who you'd imagine are true. At the bottom, it's all heating up as well. So it's between Carlow, Longford and Offaly to join Sligo. You'd imagine Offaly are favourites to go down. They have Laois at home, Sligo away. Now, if Sligo away, who Sligo have been a disaster, that if you're giving them that win, that would get them to 5 points, equal with Carlow. So Carlow have a nightmare the last two games. They've Down home and Laois away, arguably two of the stronger teams in the division. So, are Carlow going to get more points than five? Can Offaly get, win against Sligo gets them up equal with Carlow. Longford are on 5 points. They've Sligo away. They really should be able to get out of trouble. Then they've Westmeath at home. So, probably between Carlow and Offaly on that basis on who goes down in that division.
Yeah, well, Carlow might be looking, I know it's going to be tough, but if they can win their last home game, then they're back in the promotion, I reckon, and they're a point off Down then if they do that.
If they beat Down this weekend, they're on 7. You'd fancy Westmeath, Loud or Laois to get more than 9. One of those three teams will get more than 9. Carlow are not in the promotion mix. Don't get be fooled by that. They're absolutely in a relegation fight, but could easily get out of the relegation fight. They might even be out of the relegation without even having to win the last two games.
If Laois beat Offaly, that's pretty much them gone, is it? I know they've Sligo last, but just judging by the other results, Offaly will still be on 3 going into the final round of results, so it'll take a lot for them to still stay up.
Yeah, so Offaly would come up level with Carlow on points. Actually, Offaly beat Carlow, so if Offaly can beat Sligo in their last game and Carlow lose their two games to Down and Laois, then Offaly stay up and Carlow go down.
Miracle for Mahon.
Yeah. There you go. So there is an awful lot to play for in that Division 3 at the top and at the bottom. There's a huge amount to play for at the top and the bottom in Division 2. We didn't even mention the bottom, where Cork, Tipperary, Clare. So Cork have a nightmare. Donegal home, Armagh away. I'd say they're as good as Down. Tipperary play Clare in the last game, so you'd imagine the winner or the loser of that should do enough to keep themselves up, because even no matter what happens this weekend, say if Tipperary win and Clare lose, Clare will go 2 points ahead of Tip, but then if Tip beat Clare in the last game, they win on the head-to-head. So the head-to-head in that last game is going to determine who goes down there, it looks to me, in that one. Armagh could be dragged back into that as well. Yeah, I think Armagh will be there, only on 4 points. There's an awful lot kicking off here, lads.
This is really a day for a Soccer Saturday style with all the permutations to go through. And
Division 4, obviously, as we said, has been locked down. So that's it. Right, we're going to be back on the bank holiday Monday and we'll do a review of all the weekend's actions, club and intercounty. So we'll talk to you then. Good luck.
Yet it took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.